WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Funeral preparations underway for Pope Francis, who has died of a stroke and heart failure at 88. CBS's Chris Livesay.
He was placed inside of a casket this evening around 8 o'clock local time. He'll now be buried within the next 4 to 6 days.
President Trump stands by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth as details come to light about another signal messaging chat where sensitive information was shared, this time, CBS News has learned, with Hegseth's wife and brother. Military analyst Jeff McCausland.
Hegseth used his private cell phone for these text messages, which is contrary not only to protocol, but they actually may be a violation of the law.
Stocks tumbled on Wall Street as President Trump lashed out at Fed Chair Jerome Powell again. Bankrate senior economic analyst Mark Hammer.
You would have advisors telling the president that undermining the credibility and the power of the central bank is not in his best interest because it's not in the best interest of the U.S. economy.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers beat the A's. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the A's 14-1 to take the series 2-1. 23-year-old right-hander Logan Henderson, making his major league debut on the mound, gave up only 3 hits, 1 run. He struck out 9 over 6 innings.
I don't know if I can sum it up yet. I mean, I'm just super thankful, man. It's accumulation of a lot of hard work and a lot of people that have believed in me. And just got to thank all my family, friends, and everybody who's helped me get to this position.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
No, he was great. You know, you guys saw it, 6 innings, and yeah, that's the best I've ever seen him throw. I never have watched the success he's had, so it's great to see.
The Brewers on the road tonight in San Francisco. NBA, the Bucks reviewing what went wrong in that 117-98 loss to the Pacers Saturday. Game 2 of the series tomorrow night in Indianapolis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If you could change your name, if you could pick your own name, what would you change it to? Daniel Wheeler says, linguistically, Pete's last name is interesting because it requires a wet mouth. Requires a wet mouth to pronounce it correctly. Pete Schwabba, you have to have a wet mouth to say that? That sounds so perverse, Daniel.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hope everyone had a good holiday weekend. I know our president wishing happy Easter to all, including, according to his Truth Social post, the radical left lunatics who are fighting and scheming so hard to bring murderers, drug lords, dangerous prisoners. The mentally insane and well-known MS-13 gang members and wife beaters back into our country. Happy Easter also to the weak and ineffective judges and law enforcement officials who are allowing this sinister attack on our nation to continue. An attack so violent, he writes, that it will never be forgotten. He goes on, Sleepy Joe Biden purposefully allowed millions of criminals to enter our country, totally unvetted and unchecked, through an open border policy that will go down in history as the single most calamitous act ever perpetrated upon America. Calamitous act? Most calamitous? Did he write that? Anybody buying that he wrote Calamitous Act? He goes on, he was by far our worst president. No, that doesn't pan out. You, buddy. and most incompetent president, a man who had absolutely no idea what he was doing, but to him and to the person who ran and manipulated the auto patent, perhaps our real president. To all the people who cheated in the 2020 presidential election in order to get this highly destructive moron elected, I wish you, with great love, sincerity, and affection, a very happy Easter. That's our president. Yeah. Hey, happy Easter. What would Jesus say? And the weird thing is, look, I look at this and I go, this is what I feared all during the campaign, that this kind of insanity is what we would see every day. And look, he is not disappointed. He has done exactly what he said he was going to do, but he's gone even further. And look, I had the weirdest conversation this past weekend with someone who I know carried the pocket constitution in his jacket for years. And I would chide him quite often if the pages had ever seen the light of day, and that if he had ever read the pocket constitution. And this weekend proved to me that he clearly didn't, because he was arguing that, we can round up those MS-13ers and throw them right out of the country without due process. And the weird thing is, you know, even John Kennedy from Louisiana, said, we shouldn't be doing it, that we should consider a more appropriate and moral approach, you know, to our values. Even Joe Rogan, who I don't necessarily agree with often, but even he warned against the idea of us becoming monsters while we're supposedly fighting monsters. Was concerned of an overcorrection, going too far. Even Joe Rogan. But my red hat friend, no. He all on board with Team Trump without actually thinking about that eventually it could be used against any of us. And this idea of due process is something that we should hold sacred. How hard would it have been to hold these people long enough to give them a trial? I mean, our legal system, sorry, it's not fair and equal. But at least you go through the charade of having a hearing, presenting your evidence, and then you have your thing. They won't even do that. At least during the Bush years, they had a mock court. You know, at least when they were deporting, you know, babies, at least the baby, you know, got read to in court. This is giving king-like authority, and it's that pocket constitution my friend carried with him for so long, there's language in there about not being denied due process. It's there, both on the federal level and on the state level. But more importantly, this is about our soul. This is about who as Americans we are. Are we a country that believes in the rule of law for everybody, even the worst among us? Because understand, our legal system was set up that 1,000 criminals go free instead of one innocent man being wrongly convicted. Now, that's the ideal. How the system actually works is very different. But the ideal is that. Now we're throwing all that out? The idea is if you judge, jury, executioner, the guy with the hammer smashing down your door, he gets to decide? Then we round you up, kettle you up, and send you out of the country to an El Salvadorian prison? Really? Is that the moral high ground? Is that where we are? Well, that's where Trump would take us, because it's where he's taken us. It's where the Republicans are taking us, because there's no profiles in courage on that side of the aisle. And good on Chris Van Hollen for going to El Salvador. Good on him for meeting and finding this guy. Because I told you last week, I feared he was dead. The fact that over the weekend, Van Hollen was there and got proof of life is amazing. But yet we still got a government. The Trump government still refusing to follow the law. Still refusing to follow what the court has ruled. Going to be interesting to see how that plays out this week. But for you and me, us, this is for me, the single biggest thing that could happen right now. Because if they take due process away from one of us, they're going to get it away from all of us. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta be honest. I think there's gotta be a reporter out there who's gotta ask Donald Trump, define calamitous. That's all I want to hear. I want to hear the definition, because I'll tell you, in that tweet or the truth or whatever it was that he did, I don't know. I'm not buying it. I'm going to the point where I'm thinking, he's not writing this stuff. Or there's since he did mention the auto pen, maybe there's an AI auto truther out there somewhere. Because look, he didn't write that. He didn't write that. Did not write that. Sounds like him. Sounds like an AI version of him. But he didn't write that. Anyway, here's some thoughts on the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burst to come share some thoughts. She's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. If you want to check out the amazing work she does there. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
Calamitous. Calamitous, Sarah. It was a single most calamitous act ever perpetrated.
I mean, the calamitous could be that special place on a lady. It could be the climbing flowers that are all over Britain. God only knows now what he's thinking.
God only knows. So did you have a good holiday weekend? Did you stay away from the nonsense for a while? Because I got to be honest, didn't see the truth until early this morning. And, it's what you expect. You expect that kind of lowbrow thought process and divisiveness from Trump, because he's been the one trick pony. This has been it.
And nothing says happy re-birthday, Jesus, like attacking everybody in the country, and especially Joe Biden.
You mean radical left lunatics who are fighting and scheming to bring rapists and murderers and, well, what was it? It was murderers, drug lords, dangerous prisoners, mentally insane, and well-known MS-13 gang members and wife beaters. I think that was focused at one guy.
I think it was too. I think he was talking about Kilmar Obrego Garcia, the Maryland man who was wrongfully, the government admits, was wrongfully deported to El Salvador after a judge told them, do not deport him to El Salvador. You can deport him anywhere else, but not to El Salvador. And it's like, they screwed up that bad. You had 11 billion other countries, right? That you could send this guy to.
No, look, yeah, there was no question that they were going to send him there. There was no question in my mind. They did it on purpose to, one, defy the order, but two, because that's the worst possible place to put this guy.
Exactly. And I think that's the scary part. I'm glad that Chris Van Hollen, Senator of Maryland, went to El Salvador last week to check on him.
You mean Margarita Gate?
I was terrified that he was already gone.
Me too.
You know, so the fact that there was proof of life, I think, is really great. I guess one of the things that happened, and Chris Van Hollen had talked about this in his press conference on Friday, where they wanted to have this meeting, basically surrounding them was a bunch of cameras, right? And they wanted to have this meeting out by the pool at his hotel. And they were like, no, that's dumb. We're just going to go to the prison and, you know, I'm sure you've got like an office or something where we can talk to him. So I don't know where they ended up meeting, but what was interesting, Van Hollen said, is that they, throughout the course of the conversation, they had given him like a glass of water each. And he said, I think that there was some coffee, but at some point throughout their meeting, somebody brought over a glass for each of them that was, had either salt or sugar on the rim and a cherry, and set it in front of them. And so then the right-wing media started reporting that Van Hollen was having margaritas with this guy, which, I mean, Van Hollen was just like, seriously? Like, this is the degree to which Bukele, the president of El Salvador, will go to try to discredit somebody. And he said, but if you want to go full Sherlock Holmes on this, look at the pictures of it, and you can see whatever was around that rim. Like, if you're going to drink a margarita, there'd be a gap where you drank from it in the salt or the sugar or whatever they put on there. And he was like, you can definitely tell there was none of that missing.
Or the cyanide.
And he said, yeah, definitely.
Well, see, are you going in there? If you're Van Hollen, you drinking anything?
Hell no.
No.
Are you kidding me? Although, I mean, if it was any other president, if a foreign country killed one of our U.S. senators, you know, it would be really bad. But Van Hollen said that they actually made Garcia's glass look less full.
Yeah, like he was chugging down that margarita.
Right. But yeah, so it was all just a complete show, which seems like very consistent with a Donald Trump kind of scheme. Yeah.
All about the ratings. No, and look, I saw the picture and I'm like, wow. Because the pictures that have been out there of guys basically in boxer shorts and wife beater shirts, all smushed together in a really super confined space. The picture that I saw was a guy, he was well-dressed, nice big open room, got the drinks going. The imagery there, you know, was scripted and they did it on purpose. And, you know, I got to question Van Hollen not bringing it up in that moment, but I got to give him credit. He went maybe smart enough not to, you know, talk down to the Salvadorian president while in his prison. Just I kind of get it.
Yeah, there's no way that you want to have those conversations until you get back on American soil and you're safe and sound and you can finally be available to say whatever you want without fear of consequence. Theoretically, I haven't checked the papers today, but theoretically we still have those rights.
You know, and since you brought this up, look, you know, as I talked about in the beginning, you know, I've had this weird conversation with some red hats about due process, and they seem, you know, all okay with just rounding people up without any due process and sending them wherever. There seems to be this weird, if Trump does it, it's okay kind of thinking, where even Joe Rogan has come out and said, we don't really want to become monsters. It's an interesting moment. Trump has gone so far, and some of his base they're trying to keep up. Do you think this changes people? Do you think when we finally have the civics lesson that we need to have in this country about what due process is and what it means to the moral fabric of this nation, that maybe those people who are running around with the pocket constitutions that they never read, maybe they'll crack it open and get maybe a thought?
Oh, if only, right? This is my dream for why there needs to be year-long civics classes in middle school instead of just like one measly semester. And because it's, people don't really fully understand due process unless they need to exert their rights of due process in the system.
And this is what I said last week. I go, look, there are no rights if there's no due process rights. There's nothing. So all you gun nuts, if there's no due process, we just come take it. And if we want, evidently, we can just throw you out. Because that's the next statement, isn't it? I mean, you're going to have to build five more prisons there, Salvadorian president, because we're going to get the homegrowns. You know, you, me.
Yeah, that was the thing that he said in that press conference with Bukele that was so terrifying, as he suggested we're going to start deporting American citizens that he, I guess, disagrees with, or people that are in prisons, or what it is. So I don't know if this is going to be the big moneymaker for El Salvador. Is there just going to become, I don't know, like a giant prison, like a country prison for people? But, you know, he's making some good cash off of this thing. So, yeah. Of course, he doesn't want to let Abrego Garcia go back, because he's going to lose some cash.
Yeah, or it's an open black site. I mean, it's just where we're going to, it's what they're going to try and do. And look, I look at what the White House's, what is it, their Twitter account, their social media accounts. You went and took a New York Times article and, you know, with some pen, you know, changed a headline from "Senator meets with wrongfully deported Maryland man in El Salvador" to scratching out Maryland man, and then put MS-13 illegal alien and who's never coming back in the headline. Cute if it's some jack. If it's some moron in his basement, but the official White House social media account, this is what we do now?
And a lot of the legal nerds that I follow who are brilliant were saying this is going to end up in a court document. This will end up being in a court proceeding and numerous appeals, because basically what we've gone through so far is this argument between the Justice Department and the courts saying, I've ordered you to do this, you're not doing it. So we have to decide, you know, if we're going to hold you in criminal contempt or not. And you've got one judge who's considering, like giving them a 2-week, you know, span to figure things out, to try and get it together, before he would find them in criminal contempt. And you've got another judge who, is now considering whether or not she should charge them with criminal contempt. I mean, basically, these are the White House's outright admission that, you know, we're not complying with this order.
Yeah.
And you've had now the Supreme Court over the weekend step in and say, you can't send any more flights because we don't know what the hell's going on here. And clearly people are being denied their due process. And they've already intervened in the Garcia case, where they said that the U.S. has to facilitate his return. And now there is this knockdown drag out in court over what the word facilitate means. And
don't you like it better? Remember the good old days when we argued about what is,
right?
And it was just about,
nobody was dying.
No, nobody was dying.
Because of the word is.
There was just some activity under the Resolute desk, I guess, or something. Don't you miss those days when that was as bad as it got in the Oval Office?
I really do. I miss being bored. I think I would rather be bored. And this is actually something comedians talked about in the first Trump administration, is they were like, look, yeah, we're getting a lot of attention and viewership and off of the jokes that we're making. But really, I think we would rather be bored.
Yeah. Now, you know, we've been talking about Senator Van Hollen, and, you know, he came back, did the Sunday shows, which immediately the right wing is, oh, it's a train wreck. No, the guy said, look, we're in the midst of a constitutional crisis. And I don't, when I look at someone like Van Hollen, I don't see, you know, someone who says those things lightly. I don't see him as one of the bomb throwers or someone looking for attention. I think we are. I think we're in the midst of what is, quite frankly, a constitutional crisis, when you can take somebody who is here and in a protected, because I got it, he's been in a protected status, right?
Yeah.
And then never mind.
And they just,
no due process, no trial, no nothing. None of the things that we were taught as small children were how the system works. We're just throwing all that out the window. And I'm struggling with that. And I think every American should be.
Yeah. And I think, especially when we start talking about doing it to American citizens, you know, I think you're right. I think some of the MAGA, the red hat folks are saying, you know, screw it. You know, these are all MS-13 gang members. When it starts happening to people down the street from them who are, you know, people whose families came over on the Mayflower, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's going to be difficult for them.
Yeah, when they end birthright citizenship, how far back did they go?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing is my family has been in this country longer than Donald Trump's family has. So don't get me started.
Yeah, going to be interesting. I got to get your thoughts also on the bromance. I had thought the bromance would have broken up kind of by now. There appears to be maybe some cracks in the bromance, Musk and Trump, because evidently there's some money that supposedly was supposed to be saved, maybe not being saved. They were going to get, what, $2 trillion? Then it was $1 trillion. Now it's, well, not so much. What's going on?
So at the end of last year, after the campaign was over, but before Trump was inaugurated, and all through the campaign, really, Musk was saying, look, we're going to cut the government so much that I'm going to save the American public $2 trillion.
Yeah, we were going to all get doji checks, right? $5,000 a person, right?
So then in January, he comes in and he's like, well, the goal really is that if we shoot for $2 trillion, I know we'll get $1 trillion. And then they did a cabinet meeting where Musk said, all right, now for fiscal year 26, I will have saved you $150 billion. And you're just like, dude, that's really far off from what you promised. And how much consternation have you caused? Like, how many problems in the government have you caused? How many lawsuits are being brought up that the American public now has to pay for?
Yeah, don't care. They don't care. It wasn't even about the money. And I've always said this. This was never about the money. This was about breaking and destroying government. And also the added bonus of massive, massive amounts of data theft. The fact that they now have a record in private hands of every one of us in this country. The weird thing is, and this is this is the amazing part for me. I actually had a red hat be mad to me that Pennsylvania is finally abiding by the Real ID Act because that Joe Biden made the Real ID Act happen, when the reality is Biden had nothing to do with the Real ID Act. It was James Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin, who shoved it into the defense appropriation bill like a thief in the night and got it rammed through. Biden voted like everybody else did for the overall defense appropriation bill, just not that little part in it. And this guy's telling me and regaling me about the history of how Biden did everything wrong and it's all Biden's fault. And I'm going, wow, what they have done here is incredible. Because here's a guy who's against the national ID card. He didn't have anything bad to say about Doge Boy, though, which, again, really just weird to me.
It is. And I think the interesting thing with the Musk and Trump relationship is, and we've heard so much reporting from different outlets, like the big outlets, talking about how the cabinet really hates Elon Musk. And it's not a matter of him, you know, trying to save money. It is this concept of he's inserting themselves into their departments and breaking things. And so they're the ones who feel like they're going to be on the hook for it.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happened with the IRS last week, where Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent was furious because Trump announced a new commissioner to the IRS. And he's like, I didn't appoint this guy. And it turns out Elon Musk was the one who did it. And so Bessent went to Trump and was just like, dude, I want to appoint my own people. You can't like randomly put in people that I don't even know and have never worked with.
Yeah, well, Scott, you're gonna have to chuck up some money. $280 million gets you a lot of say. A lot of say around here when you've got that kind of coin on the table.
Must be nice, right?
Best democracy money can buy.
The best democracy money can buy. And I mean, honestly, that was so cheap. You would think that the billionaires would pool their money together and just be like, oh, we could buy this
again.
We could buy this better.
Go back and think about how much information on all of us is worth. The kind of information that our government has that they keep, you know, kind of close to the vest, now being out for every Tom, Dick, Harry with a big check to grab their hands up.
So if Elon Musk is appointing his own person to head the IRS, what access did that guy have to all of our stuff?
Yep.
And what did he turn over to everybody?
That's the question. You know, we're going to find out at some point, we'll all find out. But the weird thing is, I bet you nobody blames Doge for it. They'll blame Joe Biden. It was Joe Biden's fault. And to be honest, you know, probably a little bit. Because if he would have just not run for re-election and he would have just been the one term, we wouldn't be in this mess. That's what my lefty friends say. So we'll see where it takes us. But Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the work you do. Keep it up. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you. Have an awesome week.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work, rawstory.com. Look up Sarah Burris' name. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
Weather is sponsored by Peck Roofing, Inc., veteran and locally owned and operated. Learn more online at peckroofinginc.com.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Increasing clouds tonight, some showers possible late, and lows in the low 40s. For tomorrow, early showers, then sunshine for the afternoon, highs in the mid-60s. Another rain chance late Wednesday and Thursday, highs in the low 60s. It's 46 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Anne from Chippewa Falls.
What are Republicans voting for? If they're not voting for Medicare, Medicaid, clean energy, clean water.
Tax cuts for billionaires. You wouldn't get a lot of votes for that. So you have to create an enemy. And somebody says, blame all these people like women and immigrants and black and brown folks. Your brain will sometimes want to accept that because it's the easiest of off ramps to all of the anxiety and existential fear that you've got.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Moving soon to its new time. Weekdays 4 until 6 on Civic Media and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember, maybe I mentioned it during the 2024 presidential campaign. Maybe it came up every show. Maybe it was something that I focused a lot of attention on during that entire campaign, which was this weird little thing called Schedule F. And I know nobody knows what Schedule F is because, you know, we only talked about it every day during the campaign and how in the Project 2025 document that Trump didn't know anything about yet hired all the people who were involved in it, or a lot of them, not all of them. There was one guy, probably didn't make it, but swore, not going to do it. Well, on Friday, the Office of Personnel Management, they have filed a proposed regulation that would do what? Do what, you say, Rick? Well, it's going to revive Schedule F. They're going to do exactly what they said they were going to do. Because remember, they weren't going to do it. But now they kind of are. And here to share some thoughts on what that means, what Schedule F is, what this proposed regulation and this change is going to do, I've asked my good friend Phil Glover to come share some thoughts. Phil is the National Vice President for District 3 of AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. Phil, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate having us back on.
Schedule F. What, oh, what, oh, what is Schedule F, and why is it being revived now?
Yeah, Schedule F, which I guess is now, I think it's going to be officially called Schedule PC, for policy, some sort of policy term, is to move approximately 50,000 federal employees into an at-will status, completely at-will, have no rights to any appeals if they were terminated. And it's essentially to ensure that they are loyal to the Trump administration's programming. And so, you know, along with some of the other alarming things he's doing, he wants to have this total control of the federal workforce, that they are loyal only to him. And when he says jump, they jump. And when he wants a policy written and put out, it gets put out.
So what you're saying to me is, through the agencies. What you're saying to me is what I had said all during the campaign. We're making patronage great again.
Exactly. You know, this is before, clearly, you know, before the real civil service came into being, this was the way it was. An administration came in, fired everybody, a new administration came in, hired all their cronies, and that's how things were done many, many years ago, probably before the 30s, I'd say, maybe almost into the 50s. So, you know, this is no different. This is to return to that patronage system that we got rid of, and we got rid of it because government didn't function the way it should.
Yeah. Now they're calling it schedule policy / career.
Yes.
Evidently the goal here is to remove cumbersome, and this is the quote, cumbersome adverse action procedures. What does that mean?
Yeah, the adverse action procedures are what the civil service has. If you violate a rule, if you make a mistake at work, you're supposed to get counseling, performance issued, chance to recover, a chance to do better. Or even if you are going to be terminated, you have the ability to go to the Merit Systems Protection Board and have a hearing. And then, you know, management has to show that you actually made mistakes.
So hold on. Whoa. There's something here. So what you have under what you're talking about is this weird little thing we've been talking about here on the show for the last couple of days. Maybe you've heard of it. And due process. That's kind of what we're talking about. A little bit due process.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Can't just fire you or throw you out of the country for no reason. You got to do it in a certain way, right?
Yes, there were rules, but if you are put into this new category of employee, apparently, there won't be any rules. Essentially, the boss could come in and say, "I don't like that you drink coffee every morning from 8 to 8:30, and I'm going to fire you today." And there's no recourse for this. The other thing is they are scanning people's social media pages in the federal government to see if you are for Trump or against Trump. And we're starting to hear more of this. We've had people that went to interviews for jobs now and are being asked who they voted for. These are all things that are starting to happen, and it should scare the hell out of America.
Yeah.
This is not what we're about.
No, this is where we've come from. You know, these loyalty oaths are not new. This is something that as you pointed out, that past generations have had to deal with and then fight to get away with, to get away from. I'm expecting yellow dog contracts to find their way back into things, to say if you can never join a union. If you do, we'll fire you immediately, and not to be allowed to stand. What are we allowing to have happen? If again, I look at what's going on here, and most employees are going, "Well, you know, Phil, I'm an at-will employee, so you should be too." This kind of thinking, I think, is destructive for everybody.
Yeah, well, it's always easier to point the finger over at somebody and say that person deserves what they're getting, instead of all of us trying to work together and get everybody the fairness that they deserve in every workplace. That's what unions are supposed to do, right? That's our whole being, is to make sure that there's fairness in the workplace for as many people as we could possibly get. And this is like taking, 100 years step back for the civil service. And it really is it's a scary moment. And what they're doing is they're trying to eviscerate all the unions in the federal sector, as many as they can, trying to break the federal unions so then they can make these moves without any type of pushback. No lobbying efforts to stop it. No anything. I mean, this is, no court actions. If they can break the union, then they think they don't have to worry about court actions. So, this is all being done in concert. Russell Vogt, who wrote Project 2025, pieces of it, is now the head of the Office of Management and Budget. He is implementing everything he ever wanted to do. That's what's going on here. And Trump is signing off on that.
And, sadly, I go back to, how does this help we the people? How does this help run our government more efficiently? How does this get the services that we need? How does it protect consumers? How does it protect workers? How does any of this make our lives better?
Well, that's the that's the rub, right? They tell their, you know, supporters how this is streamlining government. This is making things better. This is, oh, this is better. These people over here did this to you. These people did this to you. That's what they have spewed, you know, for generations, you know, from the right wing. So here you are coming into this, you know, it's federal workers. What we're supposed to do is follow the law. When Congress writes a law on how something's supposed to be done, like, for instance, Social Security benefits, we then build regulations around that law, and then it's implemented so that the American people can get their services and benefits the best way it can be done, or the best way we can think to do it at the time. This throws that into turmoil, because you throw out all these people, you get someone who has a thought, well, this is how we want to do it, and from the right, implement it. Well, there's no guardrails. And I think that's the point here, is there's no guardrails anymore. And then the public is going to be, why isn't this working? Like, they're cutting all, they want to cut 7,000 Social Security Administration workers, right? That's coming up. You cut 7,000 workers out of Social Security, and it starts to break down getting your disability or your retirement. And then, oh, it's broken. Oh, okay, let's privatize it. Right. Well, we'll get some company to come in and we'll have them privatize it. And it's going to be way better then, which we know by studies, by data, you know, Government Accountability Office has done reports on privatization versus government. It's never less expensive and it's never better. I mean, you can go to all these reports and look at them. So
no, just in our own lives. Look, Phil, for 20 years, I've been asking the questions. Tell me something that we've privatized that has delivered what was promised. You think about parking authorities. You think about turnpikes. You think about water and sewer authorities. You can go down the list. You know, public swimming pools. You show me something that we privatized and profitized that is more efficient, is cheaper, and gives us a better service. And 20 years, I've been asking that, and nobody's come up with anything, because there isn't anything.
It always turns into, it's a profit center. It's just transferring dollars from the federal government or the state or the county to a private entity who's making money off of it. That's not what we're for. We're services to the public. Your taxpayer money is supposed to come to the government and you get a service for that. It's like this argument they're starting to have about the U.S. Postal Service. They want to privatize it. Do you think Amazon or FedEx or any of them are going to get a package or a one letter to a rural farm in the amount of time the U.S. Postal Service does that now for the price? It's not going to happen. It'll be $6 to get a letter to a farmer out in rural America. But private, go private, go private. That's what they want to do.
Well, because we've been trained.
And that's what this started.
Right. We've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to believe that government can't do anything, and which is why it's weird when conservatives get their hands on government, how badly they break it. And look, I have a friend whose girlfriend works for a nursing home that is under the purview of the VA. And when Doge Boy and his ferrets got involved, all of the rules changed, all of their hours changed, and it's being run much worse and much more chaotic. I understand there are going to be cuts to the VA that are coming, that they're proposing, and just all this horrible stuff. This is where the rubber meets the road, and it's with the people that we've put up on pedestals and said, these are the heroes who gave us our freedoms. This is how we treat them. What do you think is going to happen to the rest of us?
Well, the VA is a prime example. Doug Collins, the VA secretary, is talking about removing 83,000 employees. So under the PAC Act, when that was all done in 2021, going into 22, they started staffing up for the PAC Act because it brought in 1 million new veterans into the system. And Doug Collins wants to take the staffing levels back to 2019. How are you going to keep up with 1 million veterans at 2019 standards of staffing? It doesn't wash. And he just says, oh, it's going to be better. It's always, that's just, and, you know, and you get very little pushback on him, you know, from people about it. It makes no sense.
No, it's the one thing that Trump has really brought to the Republican Party. This idea, this sunny optimism that everything's the best ever if they do it. You know, like I just found out. I didn't realize it until I heard Donald Trump say it, that eggs are down, 92%? They're down 92%. Yeah. Now, I went to the store. They're the same they were yesterday. But Donald Trump said so. So they must be down
92%. I bought a dozen 2 days ago, and it was $5.89. So I don't know what he's talking about. You know, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
But the point is, and to your point, that they always have these rosy sales pitches, and they keep hammering on that message because nothing they ever do is wrong, even when there's real suffering and real tragedy going on all around us. And I guess the point of, we need people to point this stuff out. We need AFGE to be out there telling these stories, because I don't know that anybody else will.
Well, and that's why they're trying to break our union. I mean, that's simply why. We are the largest federal sector union, and Trump has made it his business to break us. You know, he filed an executive order to eliminate dues deduction for over 175,000 workers under a thing called national security exemptions. And it's interesting, some of the agencies are the VA. That's a large portion of AFG's membership is the VA. So you think of some nurse that's taking care of a veteran in a bed, that's national security now? Then this is even better. Doug Collins, the VA secretary, was given the authority to decide who bargains and who doesn't collectively. Well, lo and behold, the other unions that are part of the VA system, they get to still collectively bargain, but AFG does not.
How does that work?
Interesting. Well, we're not sure how that works, but I can tell you that Coatesville VA, for instance, out in Pennsylvania, has two unions, has the Teamsters and it has AFG. And AFG has the professionals, and the Teamsters has the maintenance and other employees there. And they will be able to collectively bargain, and AFG will not, according to Doug Collins' order. So we are trying to sort that out, and I'm sure that'll be a court issue. And I can't see a judge saying this is equal protection. I can't see a judge saying this is equity in the workplace.
And look, if you're the other union in any places, whether you're any of the other unions who right now aren't on the outs, you got to know that eventually you're next, right?
Yeah, all you have to do is file a case against the king, and you're out. You know, especially when you get preliminary injunctions or TROs against him to stop things that he wants to do, you become an enemy. This isn't normal anymore. This is like, you know, years ago, even Ronald Reagan didn't act like that. I mean, I was in government, you know, for Bush Sr. If somebody filed a lawsuit and they were successful, he didn't put you on an enemies list. This guy puts you on an enemies list. That is what he is. And if people don't wake up to that, there's not going to be anybody left.
Yeah. No, we're
and unions better stick the hell together. All unions.
Americans better stick together. Cause I want to go back to the one point that I made earlier about due process. The fact that there's even a question in this moment that we're a country that believes in due process. It should be frightening to every American, whether you're a red hat, a blue hat, or no hat. Once that's being thrown into question, you've got no rights.
The accuser should not be the judge. And the problem is what's starting to happen here is just because Pam Bondi says it, or somebody else says it, or Kash Patel says it, does that not mean that there are facts to back it up?
Right.
And that's within all of these different issues. And you're right. Due process is one of the most important things this country's ever had. And if we let that go, we're in deep trouble.
No, because it's the core of who we are as a country. It's the core of what this country stands for. And to see that go away, what's that the comment Reagan used to make all the time about Cuba? when the guy defected and came to the U.S. and, you know, saying, you know, if, about how, you know, this is the last place on earth. And the guy said, well, at least I got to move here. I got to come from Cuba because this was the last bit of light on earth. Once that goes away, that light extinguishes. But Phil, I appreciate the time. Keep up the fight. Please come back and keep us up to date. What's going on?
Thanks, Rick. We appreciate you always. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Our good friend Phil Glover. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Are you hearing the same things I'm hearing at the VA? Rules changes, hours being cut, employees being shown the door. I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1920. That was the day remembered in Butte, Montana as Bloody Wednesday or the Anaconda Road Massacre. Butte was in the heart of copper mining country. By the turn of the century, Butte's population was 25% Irish. The copper king of Montana was a man named Marcus Daly. He sat at the head of the Anaconda Mining Company. Workers simply called it the Company. Hailing himself from Ireland, the County Cavan, the copper king was known to prefer Irish workers. With the spread of electricity, copper wiring was in high demand. Then World War I grew demand even further, and the company was in the business of delivering that copper with little regard for workers' safety. This disregard resulted in tragedy. A fire in June of 1917 killed 168 workers at the Granite Copper Mine. Miners went out on strike demanding better safety. The company called in federal troops to return the workers to the mine. The industrial workers of the world arrived in Butte to help organize the miners. Unionization efforts were met with armed resistance from the company. Frank Little, an IWW organizer, was hanged from a railroad trestle. No one was held accountable. Finally, on April 19th, the workers had had enough. They went out on strike. 2 days later, hundreds of miners gathered in front of the Neversweet Mine on Anaconda Road. They were met by Pinkerton detectives hired by the company. The company gun thugs fired into the crowd of workers, shooting many in the back as they tried to flee. 16 workers were wounded and one man died. The strike collapsed a few weeks later. Today's Labor History in 2 brought to you in memory of Carol Hillman, a passionate friend of workers and volunteer of the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So think about that for a second, you know, because, what Phil Glover was talking about, you know, kind of stuck in my head for a moment. The fact that Doug Collins now, you know, who's in charge of making sure that the VA is staffed and has all of the resources that it needs, you know, the people we called heroes, the ones we're taking care of. That he is deciding 83,000 people going to get axed. Really? That's insane. But he's going to decide which unions are good and which ones are bad, which ones can negotiate, which ones can't. If you're in a union or you think unions are worth having, which I do, I think they're very important. Fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, protecting patients, protecting we the people. This should scare you. Because what they're doing is they're saying, well, we want compliant unions. We don't want unions who are going to fight for those better wages, hours, conditions. We don't want people who are going to put up, we want go along, get along unions. We want unions who are going to do what they're told on our team. Listening to Dear Leader, you got to wonder. Because understand, and I've had a discussion with a couple of reporters recently about certain leaders in the labor movement who seem to be moving in the Trumposphere, who seem to be moving, you know, toward that, you know, kissing the ring. And I said, look, you know, I'm a firm believer in democratic unions. Not all unions are democratic. Understand that. China, for instance, has more union members than anyone and anywhere else on the planet. There are more union members in China than union members across the entire globe combined. Are those democratic unions? Do they fight to make lives better, better wages, hours, conditions? Maybe around the fringe a little bit, but ultimately they're there to keep people in line. Democratic unions fight to make members' lives better, better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. North Korea has labor unions. They don't advocate for the members, the individual members. They do what they're told. They keep people in line. And as long as you stay in line, as long as you walk the straight and narrow, you might be okay. But if you walk like me, a little wobbly here, I don't stay on the straight and narrow. I don't stay on the line. I ask questions. I demand better. And we in this country had better get behind a democratic labor movement that we still have. Because as the Republicans keep making overtures to, you know, they care about working people, the kind of unions that they would bring us are not going to be democratic. All you have to do is take a look at how the current Republican Party is operating. They have one leader. They've got King Donnie. And Doge Boy, you know, Donnie answers to, but, you know, that's the money part of it. The rest of the Republican Party better stay in line. Ask Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who had the audacity to question. They found themselves on their ever-loving behinds out. And now you take a look at what Republicans are doing again. And this is one of those things where you just go, when do we wake up? Because Trump and his puppet, Mike Johnson and the rest of the GOP, they're once again moving to cut Medicaid and gut the dreaded Obamacare, which we know would strip health insurance from millions of low-income working Americans. So here we go again, repeal and replace, only this time, not even going to pretend that they've got a plan to replace with. And if you watched RFK Jr.'s rambling idiocy the other day, you have to realize there's no hope in our government for the working class in this country. Our last best hope is a democratic labor movement, which is why they are working so hard to destroy what is left. Look, Republicans have been going after unions for 70 years, 80 years. This isn't new. Their hatred of organized workers is not new. They've been doing this a while. They're getting good at it. The difference is now you've got a president who, rule of law, it doesn't matter. Precedent, it doesn't matter. I want total, absolute loyalty. Demand absolute loyalty or we're going to fire you. That's what this Schedule F thing was always about. And I said it from the beginning. We were one of the first shows that picked up on this. I said, look, they're gonna make patronage great again. The Heritage Foundation and their group and the people putting Project 2025 together, we're looking to hire people. Scrubbing through their social media to make sure they were loyal enough. Making sure they were on the right team. Not the American team. Not we the people's team, but on the right team, the red hat team. And you better not have said anything out of line. Is this the world that we want? Is this the country we want? Is this what we want to leave our children? What's happening right before our eyes is a breakdown of all of the democratic norms that we've grown up believing in and that we've spent our lives believing we're going to be there for us, for our children, for the future. And maybe we took too much solace in knowing that there's a constitution there. But I'll tell you this right now. If they take due process from us, from any of us, it will be gone for all of us. Because it may be you today who wields the power. Someday tomorrow, could turn around and bite you right, well, you know where. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. If this bothers you, I want to hear it. If it doesn't, I really want to hear your thoughts. Because I'm not getting it. So email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Tributes are pouring in from around the world for Pope Francis, who has died of a stroke and heart failure. President Trump says he was a good man who worked hard and loved the world. The president says he and the First Lady will attend the funeral. No date announced yet.
I'm Vicki Barker at the Foreign Desk in London. The Vatican's church bell tolling 88 times for every year Pope Francis was on this earth.
He's now at peace, and I just feel immense gratitude for all that he gave to the church.
Catholic theologian Tina Beatty, according to his wishes, the first South American pope, this cleric who remained famously humble in word and deed, will be placed in a simple wooden coffin and lie in state for the faithful to pay their respects.
After the burial, cardinals will gather in approximately 15 to 20 days to select a new pope. The cardinal electors have to be under 80 years old, and there are 120 maximum spots.